Off we go into the wild blue yonder, climbing high into the sun. Here they come, zooming to meet our thunder. At 'em, boys, give 'em the gun. Down we dive, spouting our flame from under. Off with one heck of a roar. We live in fame or go down in flame. Hey, nothing will stop the US Air Force. Welcome to the Siren Sonic Sound Off, where I, Philip.
And I, Dwayne.
Discuss our impressions of the latest story to appear on television. And today we're going to be discussing the second of the 14th Doctor trilogies, Wild Blue Yonder. So, first thing though, what was your overall impression of the whole episode, Dwayne?
Overall, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was pretty creepy throughout. I like to watch things before my kids, and my kids had their heads around the corner watching the screen while I had my headphones on. So they were intrigued by what was going on in some of those scenes. Overall, I enjoyed it. I do have some issues with it, but overall it was pretty good, I thought.
Great. Well, I absolutely loved it. I've been waiting so long for Doctor Who where I can just enjoy it all the time and be a bit scared. So I'm looking forward to talking about it. But before we discuss it at depth, which we are going to do soon, we did invite people to comment on our podcast on last week's episode. And lots of people have written in with some comments and things and suggestions and what they thought. So I thought it would be great just to read those out. And we might just make a brief comment about them if we feel inclined to. So if you just want to hear the comments on this episode or the Wild Blue Yonder, you might want to jump ahead a bit. But let's listen to what some of the people said from last week. So, Dwayne, I'll read the first one. The second one's longer, so I'll let you do that, Dwayne. So firstly, from Marcel Van Driel, saying, I watched The Star Beast with one of my best friends, who's a trans man, without us knowing what the episode was about. We both loved it, especially the scene in the kitchen with Sylvia. I personally have a bit of a problem with the scientific explanation of Rose being trans. I don't know if my friend felt the same way, but everything else hit me right in the feels. So thanks, Marcel, for commenting. And I must admit, there was lots of feels in the episode. And that's one of the things I thought. Anything you'd like to comment on that, Dwayne?
No, I do recall you having potential issues with the science fiction explanation when we were talking about it last week. But and having watched it again since, I've got some issues with that too. And the whole... Yeah, lots of different things that I'm not as happy about. I liked it less the second time I watched it, put it that way. Interesting comment. Thank you.
Okay. What do we do the next one?
This one's from Michael Wright. I think I know who this is, if it's the Mike Wright I'm thinking of. I thought you guys were a little too kind on this special, but I understand you wanted to keep it positive, but have to be balanced in your reviews. Saying that the writing was head above anything from the previous series... It's comforting to be reminded just how good Davies is at writing character and dialogue. On a simple nuts and bolts level, one of the big issues with the Chibnall era was that Chibnall was simply terrible at characterization or banter that was never close to either Davies or Moffat. It's fun to hang out with these characters again. But for me, this still wasn't Russell's best writing. They left out some great moments from the comic version. Sorry, I thought maybe a kangaroo just hopped past me then. Where am I? From the comic version. They left out some great moments from the comic version, which explained and gave a backstory to the aliens. Sadly, I don't like it when they have the companions save the day instead of the Doctor, and it seems to be happening more and more in modern Who. The question I was hoping you both would ask each other is, does this feel like an anniversary story? I don't think it does. I feel this story should have been a second episode in the specials. Yeah, there were a few small callbacks to classic Who canon, like when 14 puts the judge wig on, like the fourth Doctor, but not enough was done to make this feel like an anniversary episode. I was very disappointed that Tennant's 14th Doctor behaves pretty much the same as 10. I was hoping he would have shown a different side, and had he hardly any regeneration after effects, even if this is the work of the Toymaker, at least have him grappling with it more. So now about the Children in Need episode, RTD actually said this was definitely not a comedy skit, which I find confusing. I personally love Julian Bleach back as Davros, and you and Philip, I thought this was Davros pre-accident. Sadly, it turns out He looks now just like a normal mad Nazi scientist from here on. I actually couldn't believe how much he looked like Nida. I enjoyed it, but was confused by it because both Tennant and that comedian actor played this like a pantomime, whereas Julian played Davros completely straight. I enjoyed it for what it was. P.S. I haven't seen the Daleks in colour yet. Anyway, love it. Love the episode, guys. I'm looking forward to your other reviews. Thanks, Michael.
Yeah, listen, thanks for the comments. Can I say, I understand I'm probably going to be biased more towards the positive side with these, but part of that is the fact that I just am finding so much hate and vitriol out there without good cause that I think I'm leaning a bit more to being positive because I just think we should be rejoicing in our show, and I call this our show. I think we should be rejoicing the show more than we have been. And I just thought it was good in terms of what there's something what do you want to say there? Thank you for raising the point about the anniversary story. We didn't talk about that at all. Firstly, I'm trying to remember, have these actually been billed as anniversary stories or just that they've come back in the anniversary month? Have they advertised them? Are they supposed to be anniversary
Well, I was
stories?
always under the impression that they were three anniversary season specials, but you don't see that in the promos, particularly not now. I don't know if it was promoted that way originally, but yeah, good point, I suppose.
Yeah, there's lots of people making comments about they're not anniversary enough. Well, I'm not sure what anniversary enough means. I assume that means multi-doctor. Is that what people mean? That if not multi-doctor, it's not anniversary? To be perfectly honest, just to have good Doctor Who back, I'm happy. And I really hadn't even thought about it. It wasn't until I got this comment came through that I actually thought, oh yeah, I guess it's not maybe what fans would be expecting from an anniversary story. But to be perfectly honest, I don't care as long as it's good television. I'm very happy with what we're getting, and I don't mind that it's not multi-doctor. I think we got that in The Power of the Doctor only 12 months ago. I'm not sure Russell could come up with a better way of bringing back all the old doctors and companions than they did 12 months ago, and so I'm happy with that being the flashbacks. And as long as we get good stories, I'm happy. I'm not sure how you're feeling about. Do you want more anniversary?
I think I'm feeling very similar to you. If as long as the stories are good and I don't feel a bit icky about it, like I have felt a bit uncomfortable with elements from the Star Beast, in particular, some elements in Wild Blue Yonder as well. But we're hypersensitive after the last era for any little bits of negativity that I think we're still coming down from that, where we're sort of not used to looking for something to celebrate yet. Mind you, I did give the Chibnall era a huge run before I made the decision that no, this is not for me. It was right towards the end, after the Timeless Children, believe it or not, because I thought they would resolve it, but they never did. So I don't know. Perhaps we're all still sort of feeling the pain of that time.
Yeah,
I'm still
it
getting
feels
over
to me that people are looking for anything to criticize now
it.
rather than what to enjoy. Maybe I'm wrong, but it
They
really is
don't have to
feeling that
look too
way.
hard.
Well, no, that's because you're looking
There's
for things
things
to
in there.
criticize. I think maybe that you're looking for things to criticize. Anyhow, we'll go a bit further. I'll read the next one then. That's good because it's from my cousin, Roger McMillan. He said, "Listening to your hot take, very good, was it was." One thing I haven't heard mentioned so far about 14 having 10's face is what the creator said at the end of Day of the Doctor about revisiting some of the old faces. So I was in part expecting Tom to put in an appearance again, but he's very old now, so I'm not sure that's likely. I found the Daleks in colour to be a gimmick, too loud, intrusive, and ill-fitting new music. Yep. Frantic cuts missing out key bits, and the annoying flashbacks, which were completely unnecessary in a 75-minute TV movie. Could have been done. It could have done with a lot better in. Sorry, could have been done a lot better in 90 minutes. Well, I'd agree with all of those comments. So indeed, Dwayne, do you want to go on with
I
the next
must
one
say,
or?
I enjoyed the Daleks in colour on better on a second viewing, with the volume down a bit, so the music wasn't hitting me so hard.
Okay, I'll
All
give it a
right,
second view at some point.
thanks for that. This is from a YouTube comment, I think. Enlightenment 789 says, "So, if you see a child in a wheelchair, do you or kids think she is evil because you've seen Doctor Who and Davros? I've never heard such utter rot in my life." I'm pretty sure that's referring to RTD's comments about
Yes, I'm
feeling
sure it is.
uncomfortable. And I'm inclined to agree.
Yep. Good. Always good to express your opinions. Of course, opinions aren't facts, but it's fine to have them. And actually, this was actually asked. I mean, what I like about Enlightenment is the fact that they've actually asked questions in terms of do you view this way? So rather than telling me what I must think, this person's actually asking some questions, which is the way to approach Doctor Who. This person, next one, is from Redfield Blair. Agreed 100% with the comments about Davros and the Daleks, particularly the music. Less enthusiastic about the Star Beast. I get chills from a great story, and the cheese never really did. Sorry. I get chills from a great story, and the cheese never really does it for me. Heaven Sent was within the last decade. I kind of get the meaning, but I guess my joy as a viewer comes from the story. And my word, why is it always me? Oh, and Murray Gold's score in those TARDIS scenes. Star Beast just felt like another London-bound silly Christmas special. I was kind of done with them in 2009. So, not a huge fan of the episode, no doubt. Heaven Sent, I think the Heaven Sent was within the last decade. I talked about the fact that I've enjoyed this story more than any story in the last 10 years. Heaven Sent is an amazing piece of television, but I don't enjoy it. I think it's a brilliant acting piece of force. I think it's an amazingly clever piece of writing,
Same
but it
director too, I
is,
think.
and
I think
it's
it's
same
Rachel
Rachel.
Talalay
It
does
is.
that and Starbase, doesn't she?
It is the same director, but I just find that just gruesome and exhausting and bleak. Whereas I enjoyed Star Beast. I thought it was fun and lighthearted, and I just didn't think about the time once. I find, I know it's not the number one story is voted by Doctor Who fans. Heaven Sent, I just find it just hard work. But yeah, it's great, and I'm not saying I don't think there's some good episodes in the last 10 years, but in terms of just relaxing and enjoying Doctor Who, that was me last week. Dwayne.
Oh, my turn.
Yeah.
This is from Jeremy Power Guitar. G'day, Jeremy. Hi, Sirens of Audio team. Just finished the latest The Star Beast episode, and I've got mixed feelings. As always, Doctor Who isn't shy about diving into complex themes, but this time it felt a bit jarring. Tennant's return as the Doctor is, without a doubt, a high point. His portrayal bridges nostalgia with a fresh perspective, which is a delight. However, the episode's attempt to integrate social issues like transgender representation and disability felt somewhat forced. While the inclusion of Rose as a transgender character is commendable for its intent, the execution seemed more like an add-on rather than a seamlessly integrated part of the story. Regarding the portrayal of disability, particularly in light of Russell T Davies' comments about Davros, it feels there's still room for growth in how Doctor Who handles these themes. The show has always been a platform for exploring societal issues, but the portrayal of characters like Davros raises questions about stereotyping and sensitivity. In summary, while the Star Beast had its moments of classic Who brilliance, the effort to incorporate current social issues, though well-intentioned, didn't quite hit the mark for me. It's a reminder that there's a fine line between meaningful representation and tokenism. All the best, and thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing with the podcast. Well, thanks, Jeremy. I do agree with the line that you've identified there between representation and tokenism. I think there is a level of tokenism here, which I don't enjoy. It drags it down for me, takes it out of the story. So I agree with some of what you said, but I did find it interesting that you thought there are areas in the show, like the wheelchair issue, that are there that can be addressed. And I think they did address that to a certain extent with I can't remember the character's name, but with the character played by Ruth
Early
Madeline.
Anne, isn't
Yeah. So that was addressed to a degree as well. So your thoughts, Philip?
I think it was possibly a bit clunky, and I think there was some really valuable stuff in it, but I do think it got clunkier towards the end the more they went on. So anyhow, let me read from The Great Burst 9005. Really enjoyed listening to your thoughts. Very entertaining. I hope you do some more for the next episodes. Yeah, we'll do another one. We're about to get to it. Do you want to do the last one, Wayne?
I will if my wife doesn't turn the lights out on me again. From Suki. Hiya, guys. Loving the hot take of the Star Beast. Just one quick one. The unit soldier with the turban is not Muslim or Hindu, but Sikh. The character's name is Major Singh. Sorry if I'm being pernickety, but seeing a fellow Sikh on television was a delight. All the best, Suki. And I wouldn't want a better note from a lovely guy who's been on the podcast before, Suki. And yeah, thanks for putting us right. It's interesting to know that. We did note that character a couple of times portrayed in the middle of the screen.
We did, and I actually did some research about Hinduism and Sikh, because after getting that comment, just so I grew my knowledge better, because I knew it was an Indian religion. I actually thought Sikh was a breakaway from Hinduism. It's actually much very different to that. So yeah, thanks for the comment, because it made me go and do some research and learn some stuff too. Listen, great comments, everyone. Thank you so much, and we will do this again next week. But let us turn to the Wild Blue Yonder. Now we're going to get to the title a bit later, The Wild Blue Yonder, and what I think it means in terms of why it was named that show, because they certainly weren't in the sky. So we'll talk about that later. But let's start with the what is proving probably to be the most controversial part of the story so far, which is the cold open. So the cold open started with Nathaniel Curtis, who Big Finish fans will know from the Torchwood story, The Five People You Kill in Middlesbrough, which is one of the great Torchwood stories. Very, very funny, with the woman from Torchwood. I can't think of her name. Yvonne Hartman, which is a great one. But also, Nathaniel is also one of Russell's company of players. And Russell likes to use the same actors in lots of his shows. And Nathaniel's in It's a Sin. So Nathaniel, just in terms of background, as an actor, he has an English mother but an Indian father. So we'll get to in terms of his race first, but what about the actual opening scene? What did you think of the scene itself?
I got my back up straight away, because it felt to me like it was a middle finger to those fans who have issues with certain left-leaning politics. And it doesn't bother me one way or another what they do with it, but it just felt like that's what they were doing. In fact, we're talking about tokenism before. I thought that was a token middle finger to right-leaning fans, which I didn't appreciate, because I know, Philip, that you've said that he's English, which is fine, absolutely fine. But we know Isaac Newton was not dark-skinned, and just because I'm saying that doesn't make me a racist or a bigot. It's a fact. If the tables were turned and Daniel Craig was cast as Shaka Zulu, for instance, because let's say Daniel Craig was born in South Africa, plenty of white people in South Africa, they're not going to be cast as Shaka Zulu because it's not historically accurate. So if the tables are turned, and if you look at if Peter Boll was he's an Australian sportsman who's immigrated from an African country, I can't remember which one, I think it might be Ethiopia, but he's on our screens a lot too. If he was an actor and cast as Captain James Cook, for instance, that would be ridiculous as well, because we know what Captain Cook looks like. So
no,
okay. It put my back up instantly, I was waiting for all the other little bits all the rest of the way through the episode, and it sort of detracted from the enjoyment of the story, which was generally a good story.
Let me start off by saying I totally disagree with you by 100%. And firstly, just the need to grow a sense of humor and a bit of lightheartedness is just so desperately needed in fandom. You didn't even know it was Isaac Newton.
If it was the reverse, it would be called cultural appropriation.
Okay, can I have a go now? I let you speak. Can I have a go?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so firstly, we didn't even know it was Isaac Newton for a long period of time. So, yeah, I think, to say you got your back up immediately means that you weren't actually enjoying the scene, because there was a whole scene of humor, apple trees, etc., before we even got to that point. So that's the first thing I want to say in terms of the first thing about the scene rather than the color of the skin of the actor. Because I think that we for the last, for centuries, we have misrepresented people and made them white. Okay. And so, Jesus Christ has been made blonde haired and blue eyed for centuries. When we know he wasn't that, because he was, from the Middle East and, the background, there was no way he's that. But white people wanted him portrayed like white people, and so we always made him white. Shakespeare wrote all sorts of plays. Othello wasn't played by a black actor until the late 1990s. by the Royal Shakespeare Company. It was always white actors cast to be black. Throughout history, we have white actors always playing coloured people. Okay, and we managed to see through that. So when I see talents of Wing Tang, I don't get offended by the fact it's white people playing Chinese. I know people do. Okay, and so for you now, and I know that you don't get offended by that. So for you to take a line against a dark-skinned actor who is English and a good actor playing a historical figure who we have a couple of portraits of, but I mean, who cares? Like, seriously, what he looked like doesn't really matter. And is it, to actually start caring about people's race as opposed to what's going on, I think you're missing the point. Okay, and so I'm amazed by the amount of vitriol that's on Facebook and Twitter, because this is what has been happening for every other race for generations, and now there's a few castings happening saying, does it really matter whether this actor's white or not? Because let's face it, it's not historically accurate. Okay, it's Isaac Newton. He didn't discover Mavity. Okay, the whole scene is played for laughs. It is a joke. Enjoy the joke and laugh at it, as opposed to, oh, this is teaching bad history. Ah, oh, good grief. We've never thought about that in Doctor Who before, when we've had white people playing every other nationality. It's a joke. Get the humor. And can I just say, it may be more than that, because we already know time is in flux. People being so offended by Davros, I'm thinking it could be the same thing. Russell T might be playing a long game with us in terms of why is Mavity now the word rather than gravity? Because that's not so historically accurate. But is there actually something more happening in the show in terms of, is this actually a theme that's running through? But people are so busy getting on their high horses. I find that astounding. So, totally disagree with you. In terms of the scene, very funny. I thought it a hilarious opening. I thought played only for laughs. And really, if you can't get over the color of someone's skin, it's not like, Charles Dickens, when we had him in played by what's his face, that's what Charles Dickens looked like. We don't cast people in historicals. It's about entertainment and storytelling. That's what Doctor Who is. Doctor Who is not a historical documentary. Okay, it's about storytelling and good storytelling. And so to fuss about how dark skinned the person is loses the point. Do you want to come back at me now?
I totally disagree with you. I think Doctor Who has been educational, has attempted to be educational.
But that scene wasn't trying to be educational, was it? Okay, the fact that Isaac Newton did not discover Mavity.
That's right. But
it was purely a comedy scene.
The Mavity part runs through the story. We know that because it came up several times through the story.
Yeah, exactly.
And
but
so
it was a comedy
that's,
scene.
It's going to be, there's going to be more to it than that. So...
so there's more to it. There's more to it. Why can't there be more to it than Isaac Newton? Maybe it's not trying to be a historical piece. It's not trying to teach history. Okay, because
it's just telling us something that's not true.
Yes,
I still say if a white South African was cast to play Shaka Zulu, then there would be outrage.
But the same can't be said in reverse. But you do understand the difference that for generations we have only cast white people in all those roles, and so only
of course
now.
I do. But that doesn't mean it doesn't mean it's our turn.
No.
But you're saying it's because it's been done for ages. That's okay. It's our turn.
There was outrage when they cast a black Cleopatra. There's outrage. When we start using other nationalities and letting people play other roles, there's always this outrage. Just get over
yourselves.
But the
Black Cleopatra was advertised as a documentary. So it was advertised.
No. I'm talking about Royal Shakespeare Company. When they did Antony and Cleopatra and they cast Joseph Simon. There's been all sorts of times when there's just been outrage because we've, dared to have a different race play the role. I mean, Hamilton, the entire musical, there's not a white person in Hamilton. It was all deliberately written. And so, once again, it's you go there and you immerse yourself in the story. It doesn't matter. What the races are. I mean, we need to stop being so colorblind in some ways. And in terms of casting white people in black roles, the fact is there's so few black roles around still. It's like we shouldn't be casting white. We have for centuries cast white people as Othello, who's a black actor, black man. Okay, and now, you know, for the first time in the last 25, 30 years, we started casting black men. Well, there's such limited roles for black people or people of color that, you know, to take away the only roles they can do is a problem. Okay, and it's a bit like Ruth Madley in the wheelchair. You know, they could have cast an able-bodied actor, put them in a wheelchair. Now, Russell deliberately wrote that part for she's part of his company of actors. So he deliberately wrote that part for Ruth. But once again, you know, it's about creating opportunities for actors who don't get the normal opportunities. So, you know, it's been what we needed to do for the women's movement in terms of trying to get with this and got equal pay for women. That you do have to have inverse levels of, you know, of unfairness, if that's what you call it, to get people up to the same levels. Okay, and so there's large groups of people in our society who have not had the same opportunity. Okay, because we're always casting white people in every role, no matter what they were, we'd black them up or yellow them up. We didn't get the same number of actors coming through different races. Now they're sort of there, still there. We needed to give them opportunities. So it's, yeah, reverse discrimination, yes, but that's the whole point. Okay, and yeah, and I know lots of people can't see that, and yeah, and yeah, anyhow, we'll get more into that. But I still think there's actually possibly more to it with that scene. Okay, and certainly Isaac Newton did not discover mavity, and I really don't care what color his skin was. And so the fact that people get so worked up about it is astounding. So anyhow, obviously it bothers you. Let's move on to the story itself, the main story, and see whether we can agree with more of that at least. So what about this? What about the actual set spaceship where we actually get to the future? What did you think in terms of the actual look of the program?
I thought it was absolutely fantastic. I thought this is really atmospheric. It was claustrophobic, but at the same time, it was immense. There was a little bit of disappointment out there that I saw that was only those two in the cast, but I thought it re worked really well. I really enjoyed that, but the sets themselves, yeah, fantastic. And oh, the robot, love the robot, really scary.
I don't know. The scary?
Yeah, I thought it was scary the way it moved, like a bit of stop motion type movement. I would have liked a bit more involvement from the robot, but yeah, I was kept me on my toes anyway. I was wondering what that robot was going to do.
There's sort of a lot of suspense set up, and the sad face of the robot just with rust. It sort of had a sad face. I thought that was quite powerful as well. Now the main threat of the show was or set up by the fact that the TARDIS left, and I mean, because they left with the sonic screwdriver, which after last week's and all the magical things the sonic screwdriver did, I was glad to see the sonic screwdriver go with the TARDIS. What were you expecting? What were you expecting the threat to be, and how nervous were you getting early on?
How nervous was I getting?
In terms of suspense and. I mean, did you
Yeah,
find this?
I really wasn't sure when they started doing those switching scenes, going backwards and forwards. I didn't click what it was,
Oh, really? Okay. But
until.
no, before you get to there, because we've got 10 or 15 minutes of just Donna and the Doctor and building tension. I mean, were you finding the scenes tense? The point of view shots where it looked like they were being watched. The mystery. Were you
Oh,
growing in tension?
it definitely kept me in. I definitely wanted to know what was going on. I don't know if I felt tense about it, but I certainly felt like I was very interested in what was going to happen.
So, at what point did you realize this was going to be just a two-hander, do you think?
I think at the time that I recognized that the doppelgangers appeared, I thought, yeah, this is just going to be about them. I thought the robot might have, as I said, may have more of a role, but yeah, I knew it was going to be very small
Okay.
at
So, in
that
terms
point.
of, so when did you say? When the doctor came in, I'm assuming that the cold air, when he's talking to Donna at that stage, I assume he didn't think anything was unusual particularly. So when did you start to click that something was going wrong?
I kept thinking to myself, why are the scenes changing? I thought it was doing flashbacks and flash forwards. That's the impression I got from those scenes, until I recognized they were both the doppelgangers were there. Yeah, so
Okay, that's interesting.
that's what I thought at first.
Yeah, no, I've heard other people say a similar thing. As soon as we changed to the doctor and Donna walked in, I immediately knew what was going on with
Right.
other room. So, but I've heard a number of people talk about the fact of they weren't quite sure in terms of why were the scenes were jumping in different places. In fact, one of my kids, thought, she said, "Oh, why are we just jumping different places?" No, we're not. It's the same thing. Do you think, just talk about the acting. What did you think about David and Catherine's acting?
Yeah, I thought they were excellent. One thing I did pay really close attention to is I thought David looked really old in this episode. Like I hadn't noticed before. I didn't notice in the Star Beast so much. Maybe because they
He's
were always
your
running around
age.
all the time. Yeah,
He's your
exactly.
age.
Exactly. I'm real old too. I don't like looking in the mirror either. But I'm sure he doesn't mind looking in the mirror. But yeah, I thought the acting was good. I've seen people say it reminded them of Midnight. I didn't get that. I got more of just a case of, yeah, this is RTD style story and banter, which is very unique to him, which I always enjoy.
I thought David Tennant is just astoundingly good, and Catherine is a good, solid actress. David is a league above in terms of he's magnificent, and he will just with a tiny turn of an eye or a smile, just go from warm and cuddly, which is what the 10th, 14th Doctor is, to just suddenly sinister. And I couldn't believe, there's a scene where the glass wall comes down again. That loves his glass partitions, doesn't he? I think it was the same glass position as last week too. But when they were standing on the thing on the other side, and it's just they're smirking, both Tennant and Catherine are smirking, and both of them just look so evil. It's just sort of wow, it's just captured me. So in terms of storylines, we've got a spaceship. I mean, once again, I don't know what the science was like. Spaceship that's gone through a wormhole. And it's now kind of outside the expanding universe. So it's been sent into the unknown. It's interesting there's just one captain there. What did you think of the character of the captain that Ross was able to set up, even though we never actually meet her?
Yeah, well, I was interested in the shape of the skeleton there. I wondered what kind of creature that was. That sort of captured me more than anything, really. So it was at that stage when the Mabity thing came out again. So I thought, oh, there's some change in the universe going on here that's building up to play out in either the next story or beyond.
Yeah, I mean the Mavity did come up earlier because Donna talked about the fact that at least we have lights, at least we have air, at least we have Mavity.
That's
So
right. And the doctor didn't say
she's
anything at that stage, but
no, he didn't.
yeah.
No, he gave a bit of a look, but left it. And then they talked about a Mavity well, and there was another. Yeah, so there was a third time that the Mavity came up, which is part of the reason why I actually think the opening scene is actually being played for something very different. Because I think that there's a bigger picture in play about what's going on in time and history and flux.
Well, I think something that I didn't mention last time during the title sequence. If you look at the title sequence, you can see normally you go down. It's classically been down the time tunnel, and it can go off in different directions within the tunnel. But now you get to a certain point in the title sequence where you've got all these little holes everywhere, and it's almost like they're different universes all over the place. And there's been lots of talk. Maybe not so much recently, but of multiverse. So I think that potentially we're heading into some kind of multiverse scenario, and I think the title sequence is a clue.
Yeah, if we're not already there, there's been a few things that have been interesting that way.
That's right.
One of the things that surprised me was the flux being talked about, and also the timeless child. A lot of people were worried that Ross was going to totally, just reinvent the last 4 years and knock them out. Mind you, if it's still part of the multi-universe and things, and it could still all be going. Who knows? We'll wait and
That's right.
see. But what actually got me was that, and I do wonder whether Russell was kind of showing Tim and how it should be done. We had more emotion in two or three sentences from David Tennant about the flux and the destruction being done than we ever got in an entire season with Jodie and the flux. And in fact, you know, at the end of the flux, Jodie was sort of, hey, let's go on an adventure. And there was no reaction to it at all. There was no bother. She wasn't concerned. She was just off for the next adventure, whatever it was. And we actually saw the pain, the agony in this Doctor of what had happened, that half the universe had been destroyed by the flux. And I said, I do kind of wonder, it's Russell showing Chibnall how you should write, and the fact that, you know, there can be consequences to your stories because he brought them back. Mm. Do you agree with that?
Well, potentially, but yeah, I mean, I was surprised that it was all there, because it was kind of the line that got me too was it the doppelganger Donna that said, you don't know where you came from. So that's the timeless children reference. Which, yeah, obviously I don't like, because I know where the Doctor comes from.
Well, yeah, but once again, there's the Doctor may be confused whether, okay, you're just going to just write out all everything that children tried to do. I mean, I'm happy to write it out, but I think, I'm not prepared to just discount it totally. I just think we need to work out how to write around it and how to reimagine our heads to get it around the right way. Oh, actually, we mentioned the captain before too, because the thing about the captain was obviously some sort of horse species. All the controls were sort of what could be done by hooves. They weren't switches. Yeah, and if you look at this, lots of text and writing. There's actually horseshoes. It's all hieroglyphics. And there's horseshoes and there's holes and there's scrapes. And so all the hieroglyphics are all things that horses do in the dirt. Just part of the design. I just thought that they are very clever design for how they did it, which I thought was impressive. I guess I wanted to talk about the title. Because I've been contemplating a lot Wild Blue Yonder, because it's an interesting term. I mean, it's used to describe the blue sky, which obviously it wasn't, because there's this total darkness and not even stars anywhere. And the TARDIS kept playing the Wild Blue Yonder, which I read earlier. That's the song of the US Air Force, is the Wild Blue Yonder. And Don is talking about it in terms of they sang it at choir, and then, you know, people complained about them singing at the choir, because the song is happy and jaunty, but it's all about death, destruction, going, killing your enemies. Why do you think Russell decided to call this Wild Blue Yonder? Have you thought about it at all?
Oh, no, I haven't thought about it. And yeah, it just kind of went over me when I was watching it. It wasn't something that really stuck in my head. So I'd have to go and look at it again a bit more closely, I think. If you've got any more you can tell me about it, go for it.
Yeah, well, I think for me, because it was interesting, because in terms of the villains are never named, in terms of what the creatures are, they're never named, which is curious. But in terms of why they're bad, because the 14th Doctor says, why are you bad? And the reason why they're bad is because they've been picking up from our universe all the key emotion and energy from the universe. And they talk about the fact that our lives were made of war and fury and hate. And so Russell's usually fairly positive about people and where they're going from. And yet these creatures have been tapping into our universe. And what they've picked out is lives made of war and fury and hate, which is once again interesting. I'm just thinking whether Russia would have already invaded Ukraine by then. You know, our world at the moment is full of war and fury and hate, and our internet and Facebook and Twitter is full of war and fury and hate. And when people are fed by that only, they go bad. And I think Russell's making a point in terms of, what's feeding us? What are we listening to? What are the vibes that we're tapping into in terms of forming our character? And so you've got two wonderful people like the Donna and the Doctor, who we love and we adore, and yet out of them, because of what these other creatures are feeding themselves, they want to get involved, because their aim is to get back into our universe where they want to rage war and fury and hate. And they think they can do it better. And so their idea, and the part of the reason why the ship has to be self-destructed, destroyed, they have to be destroyed, is because should they get into our universe, they're going to try and do that. Now, once again, I don't know how much it's connected with the toy maker, and we've got all that thing with the salt and doing superstitions and how it's going to come, how and if that's going to come into play next week in terms of the toy maker and where he's come from and whether he's been released back into our universe because of what the doctor's done. It's hard to know where that's all playing from. But I actually think, I think the big underlying theme is how are you feeding yourself and what are you feeding yourself with? And as I've been watching the fury and hate on Facebook and Twitter today, I'm wondering what are Doctor Who fans feeding themselves with? Because, why is it that we are so intolerant and put up with so little?
But that's the thing, though. If you're on opposing sides, the side that doesn't agree with you, you're accusing them of fury and hate, and vice versa. So,
okay, I think can I say, I'm not naming a side. I think both sides are doing exactly the same thing.
That's what I'm saying. Saying.
But neither side should be doing it. Okay, what we should be doing is we should be able to share opinions. We should be prepared to back them up with views and by making statements, and then by backing them up, then maybe we can come to understand each other's positions. But there's no.
But even if you don't, you should be able to still be okay with each other. But that's not how things are. Is that what you're saying? The message is.
I think the underlying message is the fact that we are giving up on being able to talk to each other and not have to take sides and be extreme. That we are just filling ourselves with rage, fury, and hate, no matter what it is. So I'm not taking a side on anything. I'm saying this, I have particular opinions about certain things, but I don't need to approach the other side with all the fury and the hate and the stating opinions fact. Opinions are not facts, they're opinions. And yet I keep reading people's opinions, which they state as facts. That, this is the worst show ever made. The whole era is awful for various reasons, both sides. And then when they get pushed to them and say, well, that's my opinion. Well, yeah, that's your opinion. So don't state it as a fact. Say that, for me, I'm not enjoying this for these reasons. And I think I mentioned last week, I think people throw the term woke, at people because they, tell me what it is you don't like and why you don't like it. Okay, and be open to the fact that, well, maybe other people have different opinions and that might be okay as well. But let's actually start being generous with each other and listening to each other, which I don't think we're doing very good at. I'm curious to know whether people feel that's not the message or whether that's there or not.
Did you happen to see the BBC article that said that the Starbeast was a vehicle for the political message that they are pushing?
Yeah, but Doctor Who's always been a vehicle for political messages. I've got no issues with the fact that it's a political message. Okay, whether you want to, but how much you want to take it on board, and it's up to you.
It's not been a vehicle for it though. It's been a story that has been able to weave in politics into the story. But it's never been a vehicle for it.
Well, okay. Well, I don't.
I think the article said a delivery system for the message that they want to push. So even the BBC has admitted that themselves.
But every show has a message. It has that's everything. I mean, everyone has a bias. Every show has a bias. Every show shows those things. That's nothing new. So what? Is that a bad? Is that supposed to be a bad thing?
I think so. I think it is if that takes precedence over the good story.
Well, I don't think. Well, okay. Well, once again, that's an opinion. I don't think it takes precedence over it. Okay, I think that the fact that there's messages there, I think there was stories in the Chibnall era I felt preached at, where I was being told what to think. Okay, this has been done in storytelling wise, showing people and showing situations, and I don't have a problem with that. A lot of people just go over their heads anyway, but people are just looking for issues to complain about. One of my children had big issues with the Sikh in the program because he wasn't wearing a helmet. And you wouldn't allow him not to wear a helmet. Well, I'm not sure, I don't know what the rules are in the army. I don't know that. But and he just said, "Oh, it's just virtual signaling." Well, no, it's yeah. And Suki said how pleased he was to see a Sikh represented on TV. That I don't know why we have to have issues with representation. Why is it a problem? I mean, it's a problem for white men, particularly because white men have always had that privilege. And I know you don't particularly believe in it, but there is white privilege, and the fact of anyone coming close to, not that coming close to, equaling. You still look at Doctor Who, and today it was all white people, except for one character who you have an objection with. But two hand up, both very white. The maid was very white. You got Bernard Cribbins, who was white. So you put in one character who's not white, and suddenly people are in outrage about it.
Yeah, I
I
did
find that,
explain why. I explain why. I don't. I don't.
Because it's a documentary about Isaac Newton, and it has to be white because Isaac Newton was white. So yeah.
That's not exactly what I said. My reasoning
But
was,
no.
if the roles were reversed,
Yeah, but
then there
and
was
I've already
no
and I've already
way. There
said
is
I've already
no
said
way it would be
no,
re the
and
roles
it
would be
should and
reversed.
I've said it should not be reversed because we have misrepresented
Oh.
diverse groups for so long that we you don't now do it. That would be totally inappropriate to do it because we have misrepresented them as our white privilege for decades, and for the last 10 years we're starting to equal the score up. Okay, and so no, we shouldn't be reversing it. Because that would be inappropriate. But there's nothing wrong when nearly every part is for white people to occasionally have some diversity. And today's show showed that. Every part except for one was white people. And yet we get offended by the one person's not, when it just doesn't matter. And it may be for plot reasons yet. We don't even know there's not plot reasons for why the character was that. But he's an English actor with an English mother. And we're still upset because his skin's the wrong color. I do think that's he's saying a lot about us. Anyhow, we've already covered those grounds. No doubt people hear me that we're passionate. Well, I'm passionate about this. I think Dwayne's passionate too, but we disagree, which is unusual for us to disagree. But anyhow, I'm curious to see what other people have to say. Any other comments we should wrap up now? Any other comments you want to make about the program?
Probably the final scenes. It was lovely to see Bernard Cribbins
Oh, yes. Well,
again,
yep.
and I just cannot wait to see him in the full episode next week.
We're not. This that's his only scene. He died after making those scenes. So this that
Just
this
that
will be,
one. Is that it?
yeah. He was supposed
Oh,
to
that's.
he was supposed to be in more scenes, but he passed away before he could do them. So yeah,
Oh, I
that
didn't know. I was totally unaware of that, and that's such a
yeah.
shame.
So that's why
But
the
it was
episode.
good we got that bit, at least.
Yes, we're lucky. So that's what the episode was dedicated to him because that is actually the only episode he's in.
I did
So
notice that and thought, oh, that's unusual. Why didn't they? Maybe they'll
yeah.
dedicate the next one to him as well, I thought. But anyway, there you
No,
go.
unfortunately, they managed to film that scene, but that was the only one they got to sit, film because right after that he got sick and then passed away very short afterwards. I just gotta say the one other comment I'm enjoying about the 14th Doctor is in terms of being in touch with his emotions. It's he kissed Donna's hand. He talked last week. He talked about loving. Does he just say love Donna? He certainly said he loved Wilf too. So he sort of he's reacted to the fact. I mean, and there's a, once again, people just take it all out of proportion. There's a throwaway line where he talks about Isaac Newton being hot. That does not mean he's gay. It doesn't mean anything about his sexuality. It just means that as the 14th Doctor, he's got a heightened awareness of emotion and he can see people as attractive. And I have no issues with men seeing other men
Didn't
as
Donna say
attractive.
that?
Well, the Doctor agreed. And then she teased him
Okay,
about, oh,
so
well, exactly. It was
I
that.
can look at a hot I can look at a guy and agree with someone that he might be hot too.
That's what
What's
I'm
the
saying,
difference?
but yeah, no, exactly. But that's what I'm saying. It was a throwaway, funny line, and suddenly people want to try and run with that in terms of, oh, it's showing the doctor's gay, or that it's preparing for what's coming Suti, which we don't know what's coming
What,
Suti.
because he was in It's a Sin, that actor?
No, that's because the doctor made comments about finding another man
Yeah, but is
attractive.
that my question is that why people are heightened and
Oh,
sort of grabbing onto
I.
that? Because he was one of the stars of that.
Everybody's just heightened about everything at the moment. I think, people just, ease up, everyone, for goodness sake. Just enjoy the story for the story. So once again, I have really enjoyed this. For me, it's about doing what's on the can. Starbeast exactly what was on the can in terms it was a season opener was a lot of fun. I didn't, great dialogue. I loved the characters. I thought it had some really helpful things to say about trans issues. I think it did just in nice storytelling mode. This one, everything in the can again. It was suspenseful. It was scary. The special effects were breathtaking. That spaceship was amazing. And I love the way it's going. So I'm really looking forward to what's coming next week. And I'm not going to make any predictions. I have no idea because I keep thinking, I think what's going to come, what's next. I have no idea. I'm just enjoying the ride. And I said, anniversary, I don't care. If I get three fantastic stories, I'm going to be happy. Any final comments, Dwayne?
No, I'm looking forward to it too because the toy maker is a character that's always intrigued me. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it.
Yeah. Okay. Anyhow, looking forward to your comments. No doubt there'll be some love and some hate coming our way. Looking forward, maybe, to reading it. So for
Surely we've got a
now,
balance of both.
anyhow, for now we'll sign off and we'll see what comes next. So thank you, Dwayne.
Thank you, Philip.
Good night, everyone.